This is Robert Rogers from Parkinson's Recovery. My guest today is Daniel Loney. He has had Parkinson's for 10 years, and most people still have a difficult time even knowing that he has Parkinson's. He is a volunteer for the Israel Parkinson's Association, and he offers free Tai Chi lessons to individuals with Parkinson's. He currently has 4 such groups. Daniel is originally from Corvallis, Oregon, and moved to Israel 25 years ago. Thanks for being with us today, Daniel.
You're welcome. It's good to be here with you, Robert.
Now, you've got quite an interesting story about how this whole interview came about. Can you tell folks about what really happened?
Yes, I think by way of introduction, I'd like to tell you a little bit about what did happen. About several months ago, I believe it was in July, you interviewed Ari Breslow in regards to his work with Parkinson's people on Tai Chi. Now, Ari has a lot of experience working with people who have movement disorders, and of course, several of his people are people with Parkinson's. During that interview, he mentioned a person by the name of Danny who had been doing Tai Chi before he actually had Parkinson's, or before the symptoms of Parkinson's had showed up. And he had said that this particular person had been successful in slowing down progression of Parkinson's and almost doing away with most of his symptoms altogether. That person happened to be me.
Ah, that's great. And here you are.
So anyway, as a continuation of that, I thought it would be good that perhaps your listeners might be interested in my story. And so I wrote you an email and presented myself to you, and volunteered, and you, of course, responded with the affirmative, and here I am.
Yeah, it's an amazing outline, too. So what we thought that Daniel could do is just start down his outline, which is basically telling his story about how all this evolved.
Okay, there's basically 3 areas that I want to cover. My first is that I want to give my own personal story about how I cope with Parkinson's, and how I use Tai Chi to do that. Then I want to talk a few words about stress, because that's one of the important points that you talk about on your site. And then I want to talk a little bit about what I do now, about my Tai Chi classes that I teach with people with Parkinson's, for people with Parkinson's.
Awesome.
Okay. As you had mentioned, I was born and raised in Oregon, and at the age of 25, I moved to Israel. I immigrated to Israel with my family and 3 small kids, and subsequently I had 1 more kid born here. So I've been here about 25 years now. My first symptoms of Parkinson's showed up about the age of 49. Okay, I'll go into that in more detail a little bit later. But I've worked in the computer industry for about 35 years, and I have about 18 years of experience with Tai Chi. I actually started Tai Chi 18 years ago, and I developed Parkinson's symptoms about 8 years after I'd started Tai Chi. Parkinson's isn't the first neurological disease that I've had. When I was at the age of 33, before I had immigrated to Israel, I had a disease or a symptom called Guillain-Barré, or Guillain-Barré, as many people call it in English. This is a situation or a disease where your body contacts a virus, and you build up antibodies in order to fight that virus. And once the virus is gone, the antibodies attack your nervous system, so it's an autoimmune disease. And it slowly destroys, or actually quite quickly destroys, your peripheral nervous system. Within a period of just a couple days, or a week at maximum, you usually lose the ability to walk and have to be admitted to a hospital right away. It's not uncommon for the disease to progress, or the symptoms to progress, and eventually you have difficulty swallowing, and sometimes they even have to put you on a respiratory machine. Now, I didn't get that bad. I did start having problems when I was swallowing, And so what they decided to do is they would try an experimental treatment on me. It was experimental at that time. It might be standard by now, though. I'm not sure. But what they do is they put you on a bed, and they basically hang you upside down, and they tip the head of the bed way down to the floor so that your head is, so you're basically upside down. And then they stick 2 tubes, one in your right arm and one in your left arm, and they basically do an oil change.
Really?
They take the blood out of one arm, and they put it through a machine where it replaces the plasma, and then they pump it back in into the other arm.
Oh, how
interesting.
And
it takes about 5 hours for the whole process.
And your body, your head is actually pretty low then to the ground relative to your feet.
Yeah, it's like you're hanging upside down. You're basically hanging at an angle, you know, with the head of the bed down towards the floor.
Wow.
And you just lay there for 5 hours, and they change your blood. After about the third treatment, I was starting to respond, and I started getting better. However, much of my a large part of my peripheral nervous system was destroyed, and basically I was unable to walk when I was released from the hospital. And as my nerves started growing back slowly, I had to teach myself to walk basically all over again.
Oh, my God.
I used a walker, and I used to be able to... I started just by being able to walk from one side of the room to the other. Then eventually I could walk down the block and back, and I kept working at it. And over the period of about a year and a half, I basically recovered, with the exception of a few small symptoms that still are with me to this day. A couple of those symptoms are that, first, when I get tired, I tend to have a little bit of numbness in my fingers and my toes. And also, I tend to have a little bit of a balance problem that is still due to the Guillain-Barré. So I usually tell people I'm a neurological wreck, as I had said before.
Yeah.
Because that's what happened to my my peripheral nervous system. And now Parkinson's seems to be doing a job in my central nervous system.
Really? And this particular condition is spelled G-U-I-L-L-I-A-N, and then the second word, bear, is B-A-R-R-E.
Yes.
So it's a relatively rare condition then, I assume.
It happens to about one in every 100,000 people.
My goodness. And this happened before or after your diagnosis of Parkinson's?
This happened at the age of 33, long before my diagnosis of Parkinson's.
That's incredible. How many of those treatments did you actually get?
I had, I think, 3 or 4 treatments at the time.
Sounds like they worked miracles for you.
Yeah, they definitely did help. Some people don't recover and die. Most people do recover eventually, but usually there's some sort of permanent damage along the way.
So. Wow.
Anyway, that occurred about a year before I immigrated to Israel, and then... After I got here, of course, I went to work and pretty much led a normal life. And then I started taking Tai Chi several years after I immigrated to Israel, and I started studying with Arye. And Arye has been my first and my only teacher, so we've been together for 18 years now. And as you had said in your interview with him, he is probably one of the best-known teachers in the world regarding working with people with various limitations, and I owe him a lot in terms of what I have learned and my knowledge of Tai Chi and implementing Tai Chi into my life. So I'll always be indebted to him for what he's showed me, and he's basically not showed me just Tai Chi, but he's showed me how to live and how to balance my life.
It is an amazing interview, and for those of you who are listening and have not heard it, you can always go on to the radio program page and listen to that interview with him. It's really quite amazing. I've not found or heard about anybody that has his degree of experience in working with individuals who have challenges like individuals with Parkinson's have.
Because I had had some balance problems as a result of the Guillain-Barré, that is one of the reasons that I started doing Tai Chi, because Tai Chi really addresses the area of stability and balance and coordination, and that's one of the things I really wanted to emphasize in my workouts. So that's one of the major reasons I started down the route of Tai Chi in the first place.
Interesting.
So anyway, let's go on to the Parkinson's, because that's basically what people are probably interested in the most. I developed Parkinson's about 10 years ago, as you had said in your introduction. My first symptoms showed up 10 years ago. I went for about 2 years without being diagnosed as Parkinson's. What happened was that I was doing Tai Chi, and Arye's wife, Anne, noticed that while we were doing the form and working with the sword, that my left arm wasn't always quite in the right place where it was supposed to be in certain of the moves. And my brain was telling me it was, but when I looked, my arm just wasn't there.
It wasn't there. My God.
It wasn't where it was supposed to be. And I also noticed at that time that when I was walking, it didn't quite swing freely. There was a stiffness in it. I'd kind of written that off as being, you know, just some sort of muscle stiffness and didn't think too much about it. So I never went to the doctor. I complained a little bit to my general practitioner, and he thought that it might be from the fact that maybe I work with computers all the time and I'm on a keyboard a lot, and that I was sitting a lot during the day. So we never really went into it very deeply. About 2 years later, I started developing a small tremor in one of my fingers, and then at that point I knew that something was probably wrong. And in one of my visits to Oregon to visit my mother, I was stretching and I was very tired, and I noticed I had a very definite cogwheel tremor in my left hand. And at that point I knew that I needed to see a neurologist, and that there definitely was something wrong.
Yeah.
So when I got back to Israel, I made an appointment with a neurologist, and I remember walking into his office, and I didn't even open my mouth. I wasn't even able to explain what was wrong with me. He just took one look at me and says, "You have Parkinson's."
Wow.
All he had to do was look at me, and he said, "You have Parkinson's. You have your face is expressionless. You're stooped when you walk. You have a bit of a tremor." And of course, at that time, I just kind of went into shock. I really didn't know exactly what Parkinson's was. I didn't understand the full implications of that. And so he started writing out a prescription of pills, of all different kinds of pills, and telling me that you had to take, 0.25 milligrams for a week, and then go up to another 2.5 milligrams, and on and on and on. And I really didn't absorb a single thing that he said. My head was in a total haze, that he's had Parkinson's. And so after I got done with the doctor, I just kind of walked out of his office, and I was supposed to meet my wife for dinner, and I went to the restaurant, and she was there waiting for me, and I didn't really say anything to her right at the beginning, and we went ahead and ordered our food. And then when the food came, she said, "Well, how did your exam go?" And the doctor said, "Well, I have Parkinson's." And like I say, we didn't really understand the full implications of that. One of the things the doctor did tell me at that time, though, was that basically the medication works for about 3 years. It works good for about 3 years. They call that the honeymoon period. During 3 years, when you're on the medication, you can be treated and feel as if you don't have Parkinson's at all. After 3 years, as you get worse, the medication starts to lose its effectiveness, and then you start to feel like you're going downhill. So basically, that's what I told my wife about this honeymoon period and about the medication. And so basically what we interpreted the whole story was that I had about 3 years left.
Oh, my God. That was it, huh? After 3 years, life is over. Four kids.
That's exactly how I felt. I had 3 good years left, and after that, it was all downhill.
Oh, wow.
So, of course, by the time our food came, we weren't very hungry.
Really? That was pretty upsetting.
So, I came home, and I looked on the Internet. I looked up Parkinson's, and I got a list of all Parkinson's symptoms. There's about 20 symptoms, major symptoms. And I started going through them one by one, and I had almost every single symptom.
Mm-hmm.
And that was very, very depressing. So in addition to that, so that was basically my diagnosis. Of course, I didn't want to believe what the doctor said, just on a simple, walk in the door and look at me, you have Parkinson's type of thing. So, of course, we got a second opinion, and they ran all kinds of tests, MRIs and blood tests, and through the process of elimination, they basically said, "Well, you don't have this, and you don't have that, and you don't have this other thing, so you must have Parkinson's." So,
which sustained that dark cloud, I would imagine, that was around you.
Yeah, so I was pretty depressed because basically, based on the forecast that the doctor had given me, I didn't have a very bright future. That I had those 3 good years left, and that was about it.
This is Robert Rogers. You're listening to my interview with Daniel Loney.
Okay, after I had been initially diagnosed with Parkinson's by the doctor, unfortunately, about 2 weeks later, my mother passed away. She had had an extended battle with cancer. And so I had to fly back to Oregon, from Israel to Oregon, in order to arrange the funeral and to arrange for her burial. By that time, my symptoms were bad enough that I wasn't even sure I'd be able to make the trip. But I did make the trip. And, of course, losing a parent is something very hard to go through, and it basically just aggravates the symptoms that much more. On top of that, in the middle of the in Jewish tradition, we have like a 7-day mourning period that is a very heavy type of mourning period where we just kind of sit and stay still and let people bring us food and let people serve us and things like that sort. But right in the middle of the 7-day mourning period was the famous 9/11,
oh my,
Twin Towers disaster.
Yeah.
And, of course, I was planning on staying in Oregon just for the 7 days and flying back to Israel and slipping back into my normal way of life. Unfortunately, all the airports were closed down, and I wasn't able to get a flight for another 2 weeks. And so I was stuck there for 3 weeks altogether without family and without friends, and it was just, you know, by the time I finally did make it back to Israel, I was just a real basket case.
I bet.
You know, I was just really, really in bad shape. Anyway, I went into a period of depression, and I wouldn't say that it was severe depression, but it was a period of depression. During that year of mourning for my mother, I wasn't mourning just for her, but I was actually found that I was mourning for myself as well, because I felt that to a large extent I was dead as well. You know, I had these 3 years hanging over my head, and then my life would be going downhill as well. So I was mourning for my mother, and I was mourning for myself at the same time. I began to go downhill very rapidly. My condition deteriorated till I got quite bad. I almost quit doing Tai Chi altogether. In fact, I wasn't able to do it. I tried doing the form, the Tai Chi form, which is a very slow movement, and I was shaking so bad that I couldn't even get through it. I stopped going to classes. I stopped taking lessons from REA because I was very embarrassed of what the other students would see if I was there, that I would be shaking so bad and that I would have to quit. I was very embarrassed of that. And I was having difficulty doing my job. As I say, I've been involved in the computer industry for like 35 years. And I found out that when I was in meetings, that I would many times go to a meeting, and when I came out of the meeting, I wouldn't remember what was discussed in the meeting. I was like suffering from confusion, panic attacks, anxiety attacks, things of that sort. I remember going to one meeting with my cohort, my partner, and it was with our boss, and our boss spent a half hour explaining to us everything that he wanted us to do. I came out of the meeting, and I said, "Avram, I think I'm losing it. I didn't understand a thing that he said in that meeting." And Avram turned to me and said, "That's okay. I didn't understand a thing."
That's great.
I said, "Well, what are we going to do if he asks us, you know, how? If he asks for a status report or what's going on?" I said, "Don't worry. If it's important, he'll explain it to us again."
That's a great story.
But also, because I do work with computers, part of my job is hauling around cables and plugging cables in the back of computers for and test equipment and things of that sort. And I was shaking so bad that I couldn't even plug a cable in the computer anymore. I had to have someone help me. So I was in very bad shape. So basically, you know, my self-confidence in my body was just totally destroyed. I just felt like I my mind was willing, but my body just wouldn't do what I wanted it to do, what my brain was telling it to do. So I went through a period of time, about a year, where I was seeking out various alternative treatments. I tried Ayurvedic medicine with herbs and was taking yoga lessons. I went to a Tibetan monk, and he was doing a massage along the various energy meridians and also acupuncture. I tried Chinese herbology. All of them helped to an extent, but not really a lot. So I wasn't taking Western medication at that time.
Oh, so you decided not to take the medications and get that 3-year honeymoon.
I went about 3 years without taking the medications. And it was that honeymoon period I didn't take my medications.
Right.
So I was looking for an alternative treatment instead. So finally something happened that basically changed the whole course of the way I was going completely. I'm not the type of person that takes a lot of stock in dreams, or I wasn't then, but now I do. But one night I had a very vivid dream of my mother, and she was crying. And she was rubbing my cheek. And she was saying, "It's going to be okay. It's going to be okay." And I didn't really understand what that meant. And there's various sites on the Internet, thank God for the Internet, for dream interpretations. So I went to one of the sites, and I looked up what a crying parent means. And a crying parent usually has something to do with a chronic illness, a sign of a chronic illness. And the fact that she was saying, "It's going to be okay, it's going to be okay," meant that it really was going to be okay.
Ah.
And over the period of several weeks, I had several other vivid dreams, which I won't go into the details of right now. But when I looked at the interpretations of them, they basically said that my subconscious was trying to communicate with my conscious, and that I was about time, it was about time to make some very drastic changes in my life, that I changed directions completely. And so I knew that something big was going to be happening, was going to be coming up. So I decided at that point that I could spend the rest of my life running around, traveling around the world, seeking out all kinds of alternative treatments, spending a lot of money, but nothing was going to help unless I was willing to take responsibility for myself. Western medicine wasn't going to be able to cure me or help me or relieve my symptoms. Alternative medicine wasn't going to be able to help me or cure my symptoms. It was going to be basically up to me. Now, I could rely on Western medicine. I could rely on various alternative things as well. But, all in all, what was really going to save me, what was really going to help me, was taking responsibility for my own health. Everything else would be in conjunction with that. So basically, after going through all that rigmarole, I basically decided, I've had the tools all along to help me, and basically what I have to do is I have to go back to Tai Chi, because that's what I know, that's what I've been studying all these years, and that's going to be the key for dealing with my symptoms of Parkinson's.
Mm-hmm.
And that based on these dreams, I knew that I had to do some very serious reprioritization of my life, and there's going to be a lot of changes coming. I was fortunate that to most of my life's goals I had already met in my life, and I was able to meet them at a very young age, the goals that I had set for myself. And that there was not a lot in my life that I had left undone, and that basically that I had had a very rewarding and adventurous life, and that, most of what was, if I were to die at that point, it would have been enough. I would have said I had a good life, and, it would have been enough. I would have been satisfied. But I knew that there was still more waiting for me. Now, there's a movie out that's been out for several years. It's very popular here. It's called The Bucket List. Have you heard of that movie?
No.
It's Bucket List. It stars Jack Nicholson and Morgan Freeman. And it's about two elderly men that have cancer, and they meet in the hospital. And one of them is very rich. And together they make up a bucket list, which is a list of everything they want to do before they kick the bucket, before they die. And so what they do is they make up this list, and they fly all around the world doing all these things that they wanted to do before they die, before they kick the bucket. And after that movie, I had many of my friends writing themselves a bucket list, a listing of all the things they wanted to do before they die. Well, I didn't want to write a bucket list. I wanted to write a list about what I want to do every day. How do I want to spend the rest of my life every single day? And I basically came up with three things. The first was family. I wanted to enjoy my family. I wanted to help them realize their goals and aspirations and just be with them. The second thing I wanted to do is I wanted to build clocks. Clocks is a hobby of mine. I build grandfather clocks as a hobby. And my father had built a grandfather clock for each one of his kids. And after I had been initially diagnosed with Parkinson's, in order to help maintain my fine motor skills, I was looking for a hobby. And so I decided that I would do what my father did, that I would build a grandfather clock for each of my kids.
Wow.
And so that's what I'm doing. I have one clock built now, and I've just started on the second clock.
You have four clocks to do then, is that right?
Yeah, I have four clocks to do altogether. Mm. And when I'm done with that, I'll probably build a clock for my wife and myself, and who knows who else.
That's amazing. So these are clocks built from scratch, is that right?
The first one's a kit, and the rest of them will probably be built from scratch.
Wow, amazing.
So, and they're full, 6-foot-tall grandfather clocks. So, and, of course, the third thing on my list was I wanted to help others through Tai Chi. And so, basically, that's the three things I do every single day of my life. That's how I want to spend every day of my life from here on, until I feel that there's time for another change. Okay, so one of the things that was not on that list was work.
I noticed that. Yep. Family clocks and helping others through Tai Chi, but you don't have any work listed here.
Well, after I made my list, several days later, I went into work. I got my bosses together into a room, and I said, You know, they knew that I had Parkinson's. I had been open from the very beginning when I was initially diagnosed that I had Parkinson's. And so I told them, you know, my job is becoming increasingly difficult for me to do my job, and I'm going on sick leave. I had about 6 months of sick leave accrued because I had taken very little sick leave during the years that I'd worked at this company. And so I said, I'm going on extended sick leave, and during that period of time, I'm going to apply for disability pension. And if I don't get disability pension, I may come back. If I do get it, you won't see me again. And so I haven't been back to work since.
Wow.
So shortly after I, retired or stopped working, I it's the stage of life that I call Tai Chi, Tai Chi, Tai Chi. All, you know, it's, I put extreme emphasis on Tai Chi. I began taking the Tai Chi very, very seriously in order to reduce my symptoms and improve my quality of life. The depression and mental symptoms disappeared almost immediately as I gained self-confidence in myself, as I gained self-confidence during the form and with Tai Chi, and as I began to gain my strength back. My tremors have disappeared almost completely. They're basically non-existent today. You won't see me shaking. If you see me on the street, I will not be shaking. Relaxed. I'm very relaxed. I've reduced the stress in my life. Retiring from my job has been the main reason for that. My walking has improved. I no longer stoop when I walk. I walk upright. I have improved stability and coordination, and much better, better body strength, overall body strength. So I was able to reduce, you know, over a period of about 6 months to a year, many of my symptoms through serious involvement in Tai Chi. Today, my daily routine or exercise routine consists of about 40 minutes of Tai Chi in the morning. I usually try to walk every day between 30 and 40 minutes, and then I lift light weights about two or three times a week. And that's my exercise routine. I don't believe in over-exercising. I don't believe in getting running myself down, getting tired. I believe that after workout, you should feel energized. You shouldn't feel like overly tired. And so usually, you know, an hour to an hour and a half max is my exercise routine a day. Usually it's closer to an hour a day. So, and I also want to say that, you know, it's very important that you have a good support group. And I have, you know, Ari's been very good working with me with the Tai Chi. You know, he's been, I've been working with him on specific symptoms that we've been trying to overcome. I also have a good set of doctors that I work with. Usually doctors and I don't get along very well together, and it usually takes us a while to work out our relationship because I don't listen to what they say and they don't listen to me.
That's funny.
But usually I've never gotten rid of a doctor yet. Usually I stick with them, and eventually we come to an understanding and we work well together. So I have a very good neurologist that I'm very happy with, and a family doctor and a urologist and several other doctors as well. So I have a good team of doctors. And, of course, I have to mention my family and my friends. I have a very good support group and a lot of encouragement that keeps me going.
Do you go to a support group for Parkinson's?
Yes. As you had mentioned earlier, I am involved in the Israel Parkinson's Association. And they have branches all over the country in all the major population centers in the country. I think it's about 12 branches altogether. And each branch has a support group. So I'm very involved in a support group. We meet once every 2 weeks. So a word about the Israel Parkinson's Association is that there's about 26,000 people with Parkinson's in Israel out of a population of 7 million. I think that if you work that out statistically, it comes out to about the same number proportionally as people with Parkinson's in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
So the percentages are basically about the same. So I do, before I get in too much more into what I do, I want to take a word here and mention a little bit about stress, take a few words about stress, because that's one of the things that you mentioned quite a bit in your on your site. You know, when Aria first approached me and told me about his interview, he'd asked me if I had heard of the Parkinson's Recovery site. And I do a lot of surfing on the internet, and I thought I knew most of the sites, but amazingly enough, I hadn't heard of your site. So when he asked me, I said no. And he told me about the interview that you had done with him, And, of course, I wanted to listen to it, so I got onto your site and I listened to his interview. And I looked around and listened to some of the other interviews on your site. And from that point on, I was hooked. You know.
Oh, great.
I think you have a very good site, and I think that you have a lot to say. And I think that you're really onto something. One of the things that you stress is stress. Okay. You feel one of the things that you and Debbie are very, very key on is that stress or tension could be one of the triggers for Parkinson's. And I had thought about that in the past, and I had thought that, well, stress, you know, definitely had a very big role in my life, and that possibly that could have been the trigger for Parkinson's in my life as well. Being involved in high tech, it's a very stressful environment. And I was involved in high tech before it was called high tech. You know, there was no such thing as PCs or screens or anything of that sort. When I graduated college, everything was teletype, and punch cards were used for input, and discs were the size of phonograph records, the old 33 RPM phonograph records. And so it moves at an extremely fast pace. And there's very tight deadlines, a lot of stress. I've been in most of the companies I worked for. I've been responsible for mainframe computers and many of the company's operations, like payroll and assembly line processes and manufacturing, all run on the mainframe computers. And when those go down, you might have thousands of people that can't work. You might have to stop the assembly line, and you have to get the system back online as fast as possible. And you're under extreme stress during those periods of time. You're on call 24/7. Whenever the phone rings, you never know when you're going to have to go in or not. So my job basically had a very stressful role in my life, and basically I did that for 35 years. So the other thing was the Guillain-Barré. I had that at age 33, and that was also a very stressful point in my life. And that happened about 15 years before I actually developed the symptoms of Parkinson's. And, of course, you don't develop the symptoms of Parkinson's until about 15 or 20 years after the Parkinson's actually starts, after those dopamine cells start dying off, because the symptoms don't show up until about 80% of the cells are dead. So that could also have been a possible trigger for my Parkinson's. You know, I'll never know what the exact reason is, but there's definitely very stressful things in my life. Also, I chose to live in a country which is in a very stressful part of the world. And I served 15 years in the Israel Army Reserves and went through some very stressful assignments there as well. So stress has always played a very important role in my life.
That's to be sure. What about your work, Daniel, with the Israel Parkinson's Association?
Okay, when I was initially diagnosed with Parkinson's, I had basically enrolled or signed up with the Israel Parkinson's Association. I went to several of their meetings, but I was very depressed in the beginning because I saw people coming in with walkers and wheelchairs and with caregivers and people bent over and shaking. Of course, I saw that was my future, and so it made me very depressed. And so I really didn't go to very many meetings after that. But one day, I got a phone call, or I should say my wife got a phone call. They had set up a hotline with the Israel Parkinson's Association had set up a hotline. And they were having a meeting, and they were going down the roll call and inviting everyone to come to the meeting. And one of the things they had mentioned to my wife was that they were looking for a sports teacher, someone who was willing to work with Parkinson's people and on some sort of exercise program. And my wife told them, well, my husband isn't a sports teacher, but he's a certified Tai Chi instructor. And so, of course, they were very interested in that. So they wanted me to call him back. So I called back the head of the Jerusalem branch, Miriam Chayot, who is a very wonderful lady who volunteers much of her time to the Israel Parkinson's Association. She herself does not have Parkinson's. And, of course, she was very interested in setting up a Tai Chi group here in Jerusalem. And so I met with her in a restaurant, and we went over basically, it was kind of like an interview. She wanted to know more about me and my life and what I had been through. And, of course, I was very self-conscious at the time of teaching. I had stopped teaching Tai Chi altogether because of my Parkinson's. I was very self-conscious of my tremors and of my symptoms. I didn't feel comfortable out in you know, teaching a normal group, even though you know, I was still in the process of basically getting rid of recuperating from many of my my severe symptoms. So I really wasn't operating at full steam yet. Anyway, she arranged for me. She wanted to arrange a demonstration for me at the next Parkinson's meeting. So I said, well, okay, we can do that. I'll come and I'll give a talk about Tai Chi, and I'll do a little demonstration, show people a little bit about what it's about. So I got there that evening, and there was 40 people there, and they were all sitting around in a circle, and I was in the middle. And I had prepared a little lecture, and lecturing and verbal communication is not one of my strong points. So I began talking and explaining a little bit about what Tai Chi is. And I went on for about 5 minutes, and I just kept getting these blank looks back. It looks like it just wasn't soaking in. People weren't understanding. It's probably my fault. I probably wasn't explaining it correctly, or I probably wasn't interesting. Maybe I was boring. I don't know. So I decided, well, it's time to ad-lib. So I put down my notes, and my wife was there with me. She came to help me along. And so she came out in the middle of the circle with me. I said, okay, I want you to throw a punch. And so she threw a punch.
At you.
At me. I said, this is your opportunity to give me a licking. Okay. And I took, you know, she threw the punch. Rather than blocking it, I took a Tai Chi, you know, basically I merged with her punch. I basically, as she punched, I yielded. I went back and basically drew her in so that she lost her balance. And she went to punch as if I was there, but I wasn't there, you know, because I basically yielded to her punch. I moved back. And when she became off balance, I was able to push her very lightly and push her off balance. And, of course, people thought, oh, hey, that's really cool.
That's cool. And this was not planned then. You guys hadn't talked about doing this, right?
Ad-libbing. So I went around the circle, you know, so that everyone could see. And some people were getting out of their seats, and they were coming, do that again. Because she was trying to give me a punch, and I was kind of basically just yielding with it and coming back and lightly pushing her very lightly. You know, and she would and knock her off balance. If I would have really pushed her, I could have actually pushed her up against the wall.
Yeah.
And really hurt her. So anyway, after that, I explained to them, Tai Chi is basically a series of these self-defense moves that are strung together in a form. And so I slowly began to do the form. The Tai Chi is done very slowly. I slowly began to do the form, and I did about the first third of the form. And I was, as I was doing it, I was nervous. You know, I was in, you know, I was solo in front of 40 people in the middle of a circle, and I had never done that before in my life. You know, Tai Chi solo without other people around me, and so I was nervous. And I had a little bit of a tremor in my hand. You know, and I was thinking to myself, "Oh boy, they're going to notice the shaking." But then I said to myself, "Well, listen, everyone in this room is shaking. What does it matter?"
Yeah.
You know, so I went through the third of the form, and when I finished, complete silence. Nothing. You hear a pin drop. I looked around. I say to myself, "Oh no, was it that bad?" You know. So then I started doing the form again. And as I was doing the form the second time, I started to explain to them what the various self-defense moves were of each move that I was doing. And they began to get up out of their seats. And they came over and they crowded around me, and they were looking very closely. And I started hearing remarks of, "Wow, isn't that beautiful to dance? Look at this posture, it's unbelievable." Or, "Isn't that amazing?" You know, of course, with all these positive comments, I was getting better and better and better, you know, because I was feeling better. And so I got done with going through the second time. And I started going through the third time. And the third time I started explaining some of the principles about softness and relaxing and movement coming from the hips and separation of weight. And I looked up, and all around the room, everyone was trying to copy me. Everyone was trying to do the form. People were out of their wheelchairs. People had their walkers against the wall. Even the caregivers, the hired caregivers, were trying to do it.
So everybody was copying your moves, then.
Yeah, it was like one big party. You know, I said to myself, "Who spiked the punch?" People were laughing and they were smiling, and it was, you know, that was probably the high point of one of the high points of my life right there. You know, people really identified with what I was doing.
Yeah.
So then as the evening went on, I tried to give people something that they could take home. And when you go to a neurologist, one of the first things he does is that he wants to check your stability. And what he does is he stands in back of you, and he tells you to stand straight, and he puts both hands on your shoulder, and he kind of gives you a flick and tries to pull you backwards to see if he can knock you off balance. And if he does knock you off balance, whether you can regain your balance or not. And if you stand stiff as a board, you're just going to go right over. So what I taught them to do is to pretend you're a tree, you know, that you have roots that go deep into the ground, and that your body is like the trunk swaying in the wind. And don't stand like a board. Be soft. Don't lock your knees. Kind of bend your knees a little bit. And when he pulls you back, just kind of go with it, you know. And it'll be a lot harder for him to pull you off balance. He still may succeed in pulling you off balance, but it's going to be a lot harder for him to do it. And, of course, they were really amazed at this, and so everyone wanted to try it. And so I had all these little ladies coming up to me. I'm not a very tall person. I'm about 5'9". But I had all these little ladies come up to me where their head comes out to my nose, and they're going, "Tammy, push me down."
let me practice that. I want to fool my neurologist.
But anyway, after that, I had about 14 people that signed up. And so that's how I started my first group. See, what else do I want to say here in regards to that? So basically, I had a group, but now I had to decide what was I going to teach now? I had never taught people with some movement disorders before, or people with Parkinson's, and I wasn't really sure how to go about teaching them. I had some goals in mind. Because Parkinson's is a progressive disease, I felt that it would be a reasonable goal that if after 6 months to a year of doing Tai Chi, if my students could come to me and say, "I didn't get worse." You know, they at least say they didn't get worse. I felt that was already a positive.
Yeah, story. Yeah.
No, they didn't get worse. I also felt that I wanted to be true to the masters, that I wanted to teach pure Tai Chi. I wasn't out to make a name for myself. I wasn't out to come out with a new methodology or anything like that. I wanted to teach pure Tai Chi as passed down to Ari and passed down to me as the master, as passed down to me by the masters. Much of what I would be doing would be what Ari was already doing. He had a program in place that he used, and much of what I did, I adopted from him. Also, I met another person this is kind of an interesting story. When I had done the demonstration, there was a person there by the name of Joel, and Joel was working with a personal trainer by the name of Marilyn Cohen, who I didn't know. And before I'd actually started teaching my group, she had called me one evening, and she had said that Joel is one of my patients, and I have an exercise program for him. And he had told me that he had seen your demonstration, and that he was amazed that he said you had Parkinson's for so long, and that he couldn't even tell you had Parkinson's. And I passed out a paper, and Joel had let Marilyn read the paper, and she said, "You know, I'm very interested in what you're doing. You know, I'd like to help you. I'd like to volunteer to help you, and to, and learn a little bit about what you're doing." So basically, you know, she told me about her experience. She had extensive experience working with people with movement disorders, and also with the elderly, with golden agers, and many of her clients were Parkinson's people as well. And of course, I couldn't turn that down. You know, I had someone that was willing to help me and be there in the class with me. And Marilyn has remarkable talent and ability for being able to take fairly complicated moves, which many of the Tai Chi moves are complicated, take a lot of coordination, and breaking them down into very minute steps so that they can be very easily explained to other people, so that they can be taught quite easily. So I also owe her a lot. We are still friends to this day, and I exchange quite a bit of information back and forth regarding our clients and regarding various exercises. I adopted many of her exercises into my program. She, of course, adopted many of my exercises into her program.
Ah, what a collaboration!
So it's been a very good. It's been a very good relationship. Many of the exercises that I do, I had to isolate various movements from the form, and develop certain exercises out of them. Okay, I'm constantly creating new exercises and looking at new things. I think that one of the things that, as I began to talk to people before I started teaching the classes, There were other exercise classes around it that Parkinson's people were going to. But they basically had two major complaints about the exercise classes that they were going to. First of all, they were too hard. And second of all, that the instructors weren't familiar enough with their needs. So I knew that, first of all, what I had to do had to be simple enough so that people could do it and so that they would enjoy it. Because having fun, if you don't have fun doing it, you're not going to do it, you know, on an everyday basis. It has to be something that you enjoy and something that you have fun with. As far as understanding their needs, who better could understand their needs than someone who has Parkinson's? You know, someone who lives their symptoms. You know, I knew it worked for me, and I was willing to share with them what worked for me, and I believe that it would work for them as well. So, as I said before, I'm constantly adding new exercises, and it's a very creative sort of thing to develop new exercises based on Tai Chi principles. One example that I can use to tell you what I do is that I try to come up with exercises that are very usable in a day-to-day situation. Here in Israel, people tend to ride buses a lot, and every city has what we call the central bus station. And the central bus station tends to be a very busy place with people running around. And usually, when you're getting on a bus here, people don't, you know, wait in line nicely. They kind of push and shove. Everyone's trying to get on the bus.
Right.
Not like America, where, you know, people wait nice and quietly. There's a lot of pushing and shoving here. So I developed the exercise, and it came about like this. My wife wanted to go to a crafts fair one evening at a park, and I said, okay, I'll go. And we got there, and it was just mob. It was just packed, you know, and it was on the grass. It was on uneven ground. It was packed. Little kids were running around, and people were jostling each other, pushing each other. And I looked at that from a distance. I said, as a Parkinson's people, that's suicide to go in there, you know. But because I love my wife, I said, okay, let's go. So I began to walk, and I said, you know, the only way I'm going to get through this is to be flexible. Pretend, once again, like I'm a tree. I have my roots deep into the ground, and my swamp, my body is the trunk. And as people knock me, rather than stay stiff and hit as a board, and stiff as a board, they'll knock me over. In other words, if I'm walking along and someone's walking in the opposite direction and their shoulder hits my shoulder, if I'm very stiff, it's going to knock me over. If I don't have good rooting and good stability. So what I want to do is I want to be very soft so that when they hit me, I basically turn. I'm like a revolving door. I just turn with their hit and basically they just kind of glide right by me. So that's one of the exercises I teach, to be sensitive not only to your own body, but when you're touched by other bodies, to be sensitive to their feel and their touch and their strength, so you basically go with them, you glide with them, and that keeps you from being pushed over. And so that's one of the exercises that I've developed that I work on quite a bit with people. So I try to do things that are practical and useful on a day-to-day basis with Parkinson's people. Okay. Now, my first class... like I said, I didn't really know what to expect. So when I got my first class together, the very first session, I did some general warm-up exercises and various coordination exercises just to gauge where people were at, you know, and see, you know, how, what kind of shape they're in. And after about 10 minutes, I said, oy vey, you know, these guys are unbelievable. You know, there's a hand here and a foot there and a leg there and an arm there. They're just, everything was just all over the place. You know, there was no integration of their body whatsoever. And I said to myself, boy, we're going to have to not start at the beginning. We're going to have to go back way before the beginning. We don't go back to zero. We go back to like minus 10.
Yeah.
So I started doing some very basic strengthening exercises over a period of about 3 months. And after about 3 months, I was able to actually start with them where I would normally start with a normal class. But 6 months to a year later, though, I look at the class, I look at my senior students who have been with me for about a year now, and I see how they move, and it is just unbelievable. You know, it makes me cry, you know, to see that the improvement that they've made. You know, they're just so fluid and so flexible, and they just glide, and it's unbelievable.
Wow.
And I've gotten some really, really good, you know, compliments from people. I had one lady come up to me and say, you know, their husband refused to go out of the house, that he was too self-conscious in public. But after he started taking Tai Chi lessons with me, he goes out of the house on his own now. He goes for walks. You would never go out of the house before you started Tai Chi. And I had someone else whose wife came up to me and said, you know, my husband, we'd gone with a walking tour on him around Jerusalem once. And she said, my husband would have never gone on a tour like this before. He wouldn't be able to stand long enough. He wouldn't be able to walk long enough. But look at him. He's out here and he's walking and he's having a good time. You know, and this is one of my best students. His name is Mayer. And he practices every single day and he's very dedicated. In fact, this last summer we went on vacation with them. We went to Prague and Budapest for 2 weeks, and he literally walked me into the ground.
That's great.
He's in better shape than I am today. it works. You know, it works. If you dedicate yourself to it, and you practice it, and you do it every day, you know, it works. You know, I'm convinced of that. It works for me, and I've had it work for my students.
Daniel, tell us about the benefits of Tai Chi.
Okay, well, I think that the Tai Chi is basically expressly built to help people with Parkinson's. It's a very all-encompassing workout. It tends to strengthen the body. By that, I mean the muscles, the joints, the bones, and internal organs as well. It helps your flexibility, increases your flexibility, and opens your joints. Many of the exercises work on your stability and your balance. The exercises basically also work very much on coordination and teach you to work as your body to work as one integrated unit that moves together as a whole. In other words, that when you move, you know, your arm isn't going one place and your leg going the other place, but everything moves as one integrated whole. It improves your posture. There's deep breathing, so you're breathing much deeper and much more freely. I think one of the main things it does is it increases your bodily awareness. Because there's a meditation element involved, that while you're doing the form slowly, you're meditating on your body. You're very aware of your body and where each part is. Where is my hand? Where is my foot? Where are my hips? Are they in line? Is my head directly over my shoulders? Are my shoulders directly over my hips? You know, and working very much on the very minute points of bodily alignment. I think that is very, very important. Also, because it is meditative, you're reducing stress. You are going deep into yourself. It allows you to get to know yourself, to become familiar with your strengths and your limitations. And I think for the most important thing with Parkinson's is it helps restore your self-confidence, that you are able to see that you can still do things you didn't even think you can do. You can do certain things that normal people can't even do.
That's great.
So you know, you can do better than even normal people. So I think that it's a great boost of your confidence. And once that confidence returns, you know, because when you have a chronic illness like Parkinson's, you know, it just destroys your confidence in your body completely. You know, but once that confidence begins to return, you're just so much more happier person. You're much more involved in life, and you're much more involved. You know, you're more exuberant, and you're a much more caring person, willing to give of yourself. And I think that is the key, one of the key components for improving the quality of your life. Right there, just self confidence. So the way my classes are usually structured is that I try to structure them as a kind of a mini support group. I usually schedule a green tea break in the middle, some point where we can sit down for 5 or 10 minutes as a group and just talk, you know, freely. We can talk about each other's symptoms. We can talk about medications. We can talk about Tai Chi. We can whatever people feel like talking about. And then after our break, you know, it kind of brings a cohesiveness to the group. We get to know each other, you know, on an informal basis. And, you know, my students are not just students to me. They're personal friends. I try to develop a personal relationship with every student that I have, and that I meet with them outside of the class as well. You know, that all of my students are personal friends as well. We spend time together. We're in the support groups together. We go on tours together. You know, they're part of my life. You know, I'm not just their teacher. I'm their friend, and they're my friend as well. And, of course, one of the main ingredients of the class is that it's fun. As I mentioned earlier in the interview, if the class isn't fun, if you're not having fun, people aren't going to do it. They have to enjoy what they're doing. They have to look forward to coming to the classes. They have to look forward to being with the other people. It's just a very important component. And my typical class lesson consists of several components. Basically, we start out with a stretching and strength type of exercises, and we do exercises based on Tai Chi principles. All of my exercises are based on Tai Chi principles. We have a period where we do Qigong, which are Chinese medical exercises, good for various parts of the body and various organs. I work a lot on walking. In fact, I have several walking exercises where I have people walk forward, I have people walk sideways, I have people walk backwards, and I even have a cross step where people have to cross their legs and walk. You know, when we use a sword for that. So walking is a very, very important part of the whole routine. And with all the walking exercises, there's also hand movements that go with them, so that they're developing the coordination as well. For example, the forward walking we call silk wheeling, because as you walk forward, your hand is moving around in such a way that you're gently pulling silk from a cocoon and you're building a ball of silk.
Oh.
Or we have a sideways exercise where you're a cloud. You're a cloud in the sky, and you're stepping sideways. And while you're doing that, your hands are kind of in front of your body, and they're kind of changing positions, kind of like a very soft cloud floating across the sky. So all of the moves and all the exercises have specific names, and usually they're either tailored after things in nature or animals and that sort, so that people can very readily identify with them. So we also work in couples where we have people gently push the other person so that they can be sensitive to the other person's feel. As I alluded to earlier, central bus station exercise is one of those that we do. And we also work with the sword. And for those that are capable, we also do the normal Tai Chi form as well. So basically, that's the format of my classes. What do I do today? Okay, basically, I'm a Tai Chi instructor today for the Israel Parkinson's Association. I have several classes that I teach. I teach them free. It's my donation. I teach them free to anyone who has Parkinson's and is a member of the Israel Parkinson's Association. I'm well known in Israel among the Parkinson's circles, and I do workshops, national workshops as well. The Israel Parkinson's Association has two national conferences a year, and I give workshops at these conferences. Usually I have about 30 to 40 people attend each workshop. I speak to other nonprofit organizations also about my experiences, because one thing that we're finding out is that what is working for our nonprofit organization, other people are interested in as well. And they have me do demonstrations and lectures and talks to their groups as well, because they also are interested in starting Tai Chi groups for their organizations as well. I also get Parkinson's people referred to me from other doctors and from physical therapists. There's getting to be quite a few people in the medical community who know of me, and they refer their patients to me, so I get new students based on referrals. And basically, I think, you know, if I had to sum it up, I am extremely satisfied, and what I'm doing now is exactly what I'm supposed to be doing at this point in my life. I really feel strongly about that. I am just completely fulfilled, and I've learned that my life is not over. Those three honeymoon years are, have long passed. And my life is just so rewarding and so fulfilled that I've never been happier than I am right now in my life. So where do we go from the future? Okay, what I'd like to do is I'd like to recommend REA sites for people that are interested in resource materials. He has, as I say, I use REA's exercises, REA Breslow's exercises for many of the things that I do. And he has some very specific products that I'd like to recommend. One is, the name of the site, first of all, is www.TaiChiFallsPrevention.com. Okay. And he has a manual out there called the Tai Chi Falls Prevention Manual and a DVD that goes with it. That's worth looking at. And he also has Tai Chi and Qigong DVD set, which is another product which is very worth looking at. Both of those products I do, and I've developed, I've adopted his exercises, and I find them very effective with my students. In addition, he has another book that I would recommend. It's called When uh, when uh, When Less is More, and you can find that on the, and also has an accompanying video, and you can find that on www.JerusalemTaiChi. That's one word, JerusalemTaiChi.com. Okay. Having said that, I want to say that if you really want to get the maximum benefit out of Tai Chi, you have to have a personal instructor. You have to have someone who's going to work with you on a daily or weekly basis, who can correct you, who can see whether you're properly aligned in the various movements and make corrections and work with you on very specific symptoms. So in that regard, there's a couple things that I'm willing to do that I would like to do. First of all, there's a couple forms that I would like to start. For anyone that is a Tai Chi instructor that either currently teaches people with Parkinson's or would like to teach people with Parkinson's, I would be interested in meeting with them or having a telephone conversation with them or exchanging emails with them, and they can contact me at Loney, L-O-N-E-Y, dot Daniel, D-A-N-I-E-L, and that's at gmail.com. And I would be just very willing to meet with the people, to share with them my experiences, and to advise them or help them out in any way possible. You know, the other type of people that I'm interested in is if you are part of a Parkinson's support group and you are interested in organizing a Tai Chi class for your support group, I would also be interested in working with you and giving you advice on how to pick out a competent Tai Chi teacher. I'd be willing to share with the teacher and the class as well as what types of exercises that I do, and give any advice that I could possibly give to help you be successful in your endeavors. And the third thing that I'm willing to do that I would be interested in doing is that I usually make it to the States about once a year. I usually travel through Europe. And if anyone is interested in workshops, I'd be willing to conduct workshops for them or for their people. They can just contact me once again at loney.daniel@gmail.com. And when I'm passing through, I'd be just more than happy to give a workshop.
So the bottom line is, if, for example, a support group in Griffin, Georgia is thinking, oh, this is a great idea, but we don't know how to get started, they can contact you, and you'll be able to give them some assistance.
That's right. They can contact me. I can show them how to go about finding a competent teacher. I can, once they think they've found a teacher, they can have the teacher contact me. I can show the teacher the types of exercises that I do. If the teacher has experience working with people with Parkinson's disease or other mobility disorders, I can give my advice as well. And I think that basically what I would eventually like to do is set up a forum. I would like to see a forum set up for two types of people. A forum set up for Tai Chi teachers working with Parkinson's, and another forum set up for the Tai Chi students as well. And I'm willing to go to all the work to set up the forum and to take care of the forum. If there's enough people that will contact me through the email, then we'll get something started.
That sounds absolutely awesome to me, Daniel. And it is a way for people to take action. So having listened to your discussion and the explanation of how Tai Chi can be incredibly beneficial for people with the symptoms of Parkinson's, there's really no reason not to take action. They can email you. They may say, I don't know how to get started, but they can email you and say, look, I'm interested, but I don't know really how to get started, and have a conversation with you, and you'll be able to help out.
That's correct. You know, if I had to sum up anything, if I had to sum up the whole interview, it would be this. You know, Tai Chi is not an end in itself. It's a means to an end. You know, it's a way to increase your self-confidence, and it's a way to address your symptoms. You know, but basically what you have to do is you have to take responsibility for yourself. You know, Tai Chi is not going to heal you. You have to heal yourself. You have to reduce the symptoms yourself. And you can use Tai Chi to do that. Maybe Tai Chi isn't for you. Maybe there's some sort of other exercise program. Maybe there's various alternative techniques that you want to use. Maybe it's Western medicine. But in the final analysis, it's up to you. And you have to take responsibility for your health, and you have to take responsibility for your future.
Daniel, what would you want to say to a person who has just been diagnosed with Parkinson's disease?
the best thing you can do is, well, actually, there's two things you can do. Get involved in a support group. Support groups are extremely important. It's very important that you have feedback from other people, that you have contact with other people, and that you see what they're going through and what kind of experiences they have. They have a lot of advice to share. I always tell people that my heroes in my life, my heroes, are other people with Parkinson's. I have met unbelievable people that are just normal people, but how they deal with their Parkinson's, it just blows me away. You know, Michael J. Fox is one of my heroes. Muhammad Ali is one of my heroes. And I just, you know, and just people I come in contact with in everyday life through normal Parkinson's support groups, they are my heroes. They truly are. And the other thing I would recommend is they get involved in an exercise program, whether it's Tai Chi or dance or whatever turns them on, get involved and do it. Because that's exercise and keeping your body moving is one of the things that keeps you healthy. The Chinese have a saying that you are only as healthy as your legs. In other words, when you lose your legs, you lose your mobility. And when you lose your mobility, stagnation starts to set in. And that's when you become susceptible to all kinds of diseases and conditions, and that's eventually what's going to, is going to kill you. So you're only as healthy as your legs. So keep moving, keep exercising, and keep a positive attitude. I think that's, it's important you be optimistic, and you be positive.
Daniel Loney, from the bottom of my heart, I want to thank you for doing this incredible interview today and telling us all your story.
Well, thank you very much, Robert. Like I say, I'm hooked on your site, and I'll be there watching every interview and listening to every interview and watching all the new things that you have coming out in the future.
Awesome. We look forward to future contacts in the coming years.
Okay, great.
And that's what's happening on the shores of the Puget Sound, where all the women are smart, all the men are handsome, and all the children are truly loved. Know that you are on the road to recovery. Good day.